Picture this, a recording studio somewhere far, far away.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time for
the Merry White House Experience. Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Merry White House Experience. I am very pleased to be asked to introduce this show, except for Rapido, of course, not as good. But anyway, I come from Newcastle upon Tyne, but one day I take too much amphetamine, et voilà, I talk like this. And what is moreover, my arms fell off. Oh! Anyway, time now. Please welcome a couple of young men from England, as you like to call them, Pont and Dennis. Sadly, not Transvision Vamp, but Israel, go crazy, please, for Pont and Dennis.
Okay. Right, well, this week we start with some words of wisdom from Mr. Brian Robson. After the Nottingham Forest Manchester United game last Sunday, Mr. Robson went on telly and offered this pungent assessment of the game.
If we could play that well every week, we wouldn't be so inconsistent.
Which does bring us neatly to the subject of English and how we use it. Prince Charles has recently expressed concern that our glorious native tongue is suffering from neglect. The Prince, of course, speaks perfect English, as his plants will testify. Many people agree with the Prince. For example, the original King James Standard Version of the Bible is thought by many to be the best translation from the original Greek.
Okay, lads.
Oh, Your Majesty.
How are you getting on? What do you make the first sentence?
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
At the beginning, God made heaven and earth.
I've got, first off, God done the lot. The famous Derek Jameson version there. The original Greek version also included a problematic reference to 5 loaves, 2 fishes and a portion of tara masalata. Prince Charles illustrated his point about the poor quality of modern English by translating Shakespeare's to be or not to be speech into contemporary language. But this is false logic. Let's face it, there are lots of modern situations where 17th century language wouldn't be much use either.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Edwin.
Is Martina Navratilova, my liege?
Nay, and thrice I must say to you, nay. Now, squeaky voice, ex-kicker of the bladospherical. The question, therefore, I offer to Bill's team. Bill of Beaumont, what thinkest thou?
Sire, we are of a mind that the visage there presented is that of Hannah Manlikova.
Indeed. 2 full points I bestow upon you. And now, competitors all, the next round. What befalleth next?
However, there can be no doubt that in some hands, modern English is crap. One man who is currently doing for the language what Brian Robson is doing for logic is George Bush. Good morning, George.
This is indeed the pre-midday period, though I withhold judgment on its goodity or its baditude.
Would you like some breakfast, sir?
As regards the breakfastational issue, I am convinced that nourishmentally and taste-wise, the boiled egg option is what made America great.
Even worse havoc is being wreaked by the tabloid press, who have invented a dialect of their own, a dialect spoken nowhere in Britain outside of newspaper offices.
Hello. How's your son Nigel? 26.
Fine, he's to wed.
Oh, is he to wed his long-time live-in lover, or is it a whirlwind romance?
It's Janine, 22, 36, 24, 36. And she's expecting his love child.
Shock.
Yes, friends say he had a stormy relationship with a tug-of-love mother whose former hubby, an office Romeo, saw red after his snip-op and became a heartbreak death plunge statistic. And now, the transport experience. As everyone knows, the best way of getting around these days is the bus.
Certainly in London, there's no vehicle better equipped for nipping through the heavy traffic than a 200-ton diesel-powered traction engine. And there are certain things you will always hear while waiting for public transport. Waiting for buses, someone will always say...
Well, you wait here for ages, don't you? And then, wouldn't you believe it, 15 of them all come at once.
Waiting for a train, someone will always say...
Typical British man.
And, of course, waiting on the underground, someone will always say...
Fire! Fire! Fire!
So your best bet, really, is to travel by car. But this does mean keeping an ear open for radio traffic news. Now, anyone who's ever driven in London knows that these will always tell you to avoid the Hanger Lane gyratory. Mainly because no one knows what it is. Some maintain that it is, in fact, the name of one of James Brown's favourite dances. Others that it is a huge fairground ride which you drive onto without realising it, rather like the Hendon Waltzer or the Watford Gap Wave Machine.
However, traffic has in fact improved over the last 10 years. Television now no longer shows us pictures of complete and utter traffic chaos, as it used to do every week on Wacky Races. It was this situation that led to the introduction of radio traffic news.
Motorists approaching the area may experience driving halfway across in midair, stopping, turning around with a deadpan look on their face, and then plunging 2,000 feet into the Thames. Meanwhile, in the Southall region, hold on a minute. What's that? It looks like a flying dog keeping itself aloft by using its tiny tail as a... Oh, my God!
An indispensable aid to getting around in your car is the A to Z. All city street finders are called the A to Z, except for Beirut's, which is called the A to B. Apart from these, there is the Nicholson Street Finder.
Well, I gotta tell you guys, I don't know where the f*** I am.
And now we're going to do a version of that joke that can go on the radio. Apart from these, there is the Nicholson Street Finder. This is a book which you open up wanting to go to, say, Stanmore, and it says...
I don't know why you want to go there. The drugs are all in the All Saints goddamn road, huh?
Looks like neither of them are going on the radio. The only real problem with a car is having to go to the garage. This is because garages present such an unambiguous version of masculinity. Most of the time, the atmosphere we breathe is made up of 10% carbon dioxide and 90% oxygen. In a garage, it's 10% carbon dioxide and 90% testosterone. Garages really are the beer belly of the beast as far as heterosexuality is concerned. The problem for men is that not knowing about cars, which is of course why one uses a garage, is tantamount to going in there in a leotard. You see, when the mechanic says...
Well, it's a sprocket.
The subtext of what he's saying is...
As any honest Englishman who's never touched another man except to beat him up ought to know.
And of course, garages always exploit this guilt to mystify the process of fixing your car, especially if it's a foreign car. I mean, if your car is anything except a Ford Granada, you might as well be asking them to fix the Arkansas Chuggerbug. But as we all know from watching Grand Prix, a car can go into the pit stop on fire and be back on the track again in seconds.
And in the last lap of the British Grand Prix, Alain Prost has built up a lead of over 37 laps of 12 seconds, and surely now the championship is in the bag as he goes in for his last pit stop.
Wait, complete tire change and oil in the turbo shaft.
Well, it's nowhere unfit here today. If you want to leave the keys, I can have it done by Thursday.
What? Hurry up, you stupid man. I've already lost 5 seconds to Senna.
Well, it's going to cost you. I mean, how long's this car been on the road?
53 minutes.
Oh, well, you want a complete overhaul then, really. You see, the truth is, mate, you see, these cars just aren't built for speed. No, not these, mate. You see, what you should have gone for, of course, is a Ford Granada, you see. A gear, preferably. In fact, we just happen to have one here on the forecourt. £275, lovely number, MOT, 10,000 on the clock. I'd buy it myself, honestly.
Oh, I'd like anything, anything!
And Senna has taken the lead, but here comes Alan Prost out of the pits in the Ferrari. Oh, the Ford Granada gear! In fact, the same one I sold for £20 after I'd written it off in 1974. So, Senna driving the McLaren, equipped with 8 cylinders, 500 horsepower, and a streamlined aerodynamic shell. While Prost is in the gear, which is equipped with a mock leather steering wheel cover, and a cassette player that does not work. So there's only one thing that can stop Senna now. Me saying he's bound to win!
Basham, 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 Murray Walker.
Thank you very much. And now, please welcome Mark Thomas. Yeah.
Well, this week, Norman Fowler resigned. Big R. And I suppose we ought to be asking a few questions like, who was he? What did he do? Are the cabinet running around going, where's that specky runt who made the tea? He actually resigned so he could be with his children more often, which I think is brilliant, because all the kids are sitting there going, oh no! We told everyone we were test tube babies! What really annoyed me recently is one specific thing, and that is I absolutely hate it when the stock exchange does well. Because you get all the brokers on the trains rushing around going, oh, here's a fiver, do the crossword for me, go off you go. And you're just standing there thinking, where are Millwall supporters when you need them? But I like it when the stock exchange goes down. It's great. The stock exchange mucks up. I always go down to Oxfam because you can normally get a couple of good suits on the cheap then. It's just terrific. You know, the stock exchange goes down. Join the Samaritans. It's brilliant just listening to them drivelling on the other end while you're sitting there going, have you seen the old man in the street? We've got Noriega's trial coming up as well, which I think Noriega ought to ask to be tried by Judge Pickles. Are you pregnant? No, you're free. Off you go. Oh, dear. Well, actually, while this is all going on, this was a good one, actually. We had Durex opening 2 factories in the Soviet Union. But I just want to see all the marketing ploys. So, like, outside the Soviet Durex machine, there's just sort of, like, bread, peace and latex. Richard Branson moves in with his new brand, Comrades. The real 5-year plan. And finally, I was thinking, while this is all going on, the British have come up trumps again. We've invented a laser weapon on boots, which is the only optical treatment you can get on the state now. But this machine, the brilliant thing about this machine, it gives you temporary blindness. And then it kind of blurs your vision up. You can't see properly. Lots of bright colours come in front of your eyes. And I thought it's like Glastonbury, really.
Now. The revolutionary experience. It can't have escaped many people's attention that Eastern Europe is currently undergoing a revolution. The German Democratic Republic, Romania, Czechoslovakia, Poland, all are in the process of changing the way they are governed by the will of the people. Last year was the bicentennial of the French Revolution, which gave the world liberty, equality, fraternity, and unfortunately, Les Miserables.
The question is, why have we in Britain never had a revolution? Well, there are a whole range of reasons.
This is the Northern Line Information Service. We regret that trains will not be calling at Trafalgar Square owing to a gust of wind in Barnet.
Today in Britain, thousands of people have taken to the streets chanting their demands.
We demand A, to sit at home and watch the telly a lot. We demand B, to have a nice car with a sunroof and a Garfield. We demand C, to go to the Burnie and have the scampi.
We are a deeply unrevolutionary people. And let's face it, we always have been. Even when we were conquered by the Romans, British resistance relied on plucky volunteers.
All right, men, gather round. Gather round, everybody. Come on, gents. We've got word from Boadicea have a Roman advance. I want you all to check your spears.
Are you awfully sure that's wise?
Do you mind? Do you mind? I'm the commanding officer here. I'll go in the chariot.
Mr. Menowok.
What is it, Godfrey?
My sister Dolly says the Romans make awfully good pasta.
Be quiet, Godfrey.
Mr. Menowok. Mr. Menowok.
Yes, Pikeford.
I can fool them all, sir, because I can speak to them in Latin, Mr. Menowok. Hello, Caesar. I'm on the point of being about to run away by with or from you. Whistle while you work. Caesar is a twerp.
Stupid boy.
I don't like it up him, sir.
Captain Menowok, the Roman army is highly trained. Highly trained and brutal. If we're taken prisoner, we'll be taken to Rome and fed to the lions. We'll be eaten alive. That's a slow, painful death. And as for the women, the fate they suffer will be even worse. A fate so terrible, you prefer them to be fed to the lions. Hence the origin of the phrase, I'm gladiator.
Now, it was to keep out jokes like that, that the Scots were separated off from England by the Romans, who built Hadrian's Wall, specifically for this purpose.
Roman soldiers patrolled the wall for 400 years until finally the Scots and English rose up.
I'm standing by Hadrian's Wall where tonight the Roman Empire is in decline and fall. I can see up on top of the wall English and Scottish people together for the first time in four centuries. The latest news is that Emperor Constantine has resigned. He has gone along with three of his ministers and a horse. The caretaker emperor, Mr. Honeckian, says that talk of a reunited Britain is premature. But tonight, as the Picts pour into England and are handed out their 50 groats and one-day rail card, tonight the English and Scottish tribes are greeting each other with their long-lost traditional salutations.
You're gonna get your kinney kicked in. See you, pal.
England was subsequently invaded by the Saxons, the Vikings and the Normans, who not only conquered us but became our aristocracy. After this, we were even more hopeless at revolutions. In medieval England, there was a peasants' revolt, led by Wat Tyler, which failed because no one could take a revolution seriously, which was led by someone with such a stupid name. Subsequent attempted revolutions fared even worse, led as they were by Wat Hi-Fi, Wat Satellite Dish, and Wat Ever Happened to the Likely Lads.
And now, Rob Newman presents a short reading from Heathcote Williams' classic conservation poem, Whale Nation. If Mr. Williams is listening, he may perhaps notice that Rob has taken the liberty of adding a line or two of his own. But I think you'll agree that this does not interfere with the poem's meaning in any way. Whale Nation.
Oh, whale, scientific research shows you communicate in a language twice as sophisticated as English, but I wouldn't think very much of a man who could speak a language twice as sophisticated as English and yet spent his whole time merely saying, woohoo, woo, out of the body of one whale is made oil, jewellery, clothes, medicine, soap, furniture, cosmetics and ornaments. What a bargain. Try getting that lot out of a panda. Oh, whale, you are equipped with a natural sonar radar, far more sophisticated than modern technology. I, on the other hand, equipped only with a Nicholson Street Finder and a poor sense of direction, have yet to park my car underneath a polar ice cap. Oh, whale, for hundreds of years man has shot, harpooned, hacked, or poisoned you. Aren't you getting the hint here, asshole? You think you're so clever with your one-party trick, being able to fart out of your head. In 2 years' time, there will be no more pandas, and then you're next. Thank you.
clean off.
And now, the first in a new series, the Public Should Know experience. Each week we take a story which has been buried in a column or letters page somewhere in a newspaper and bring to light its full implications. This week's story comes from The Indie. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, The Indie, produced by The Independent, is a newspaper for children. Now, one wonders what would happen if other newspapers were designed for children. You'd get The Daily Maily, The Socialist Worky, and The Star. Especially as regards the age of its page three girls. Now, The Indie, despite the age of its readership, is a paper which can often bring fresh and original insights into many of the major issues which face us. The letters page in particular demonstrates the paper's maturity with correspondents tackling such issues as racism, the Middle East, green politics, and this letter, which comes from the 2nd of January edition. This is an absolutely genuine letter. I have the original cutout here in my hand. Amazingly, it was written by a 9-year-old.
Dear Indie, I am 9 years old, and I used to have a very nice girlfriend up until yesterday. My friends were jealous of me and started spreading rumours about me not being able to wipe my bottom after I go to the loo. They said I have to get the teachers to do it. She believed them and dumped me. Please, can you help me? Yours sincerely, Douglas Hurd.
No, it wasn't from Douglas Hurd. It is actually from a boy called Simon who lives in Kent. Now, it's all very well to laugh, but one remembers how cruel schoolchildren can be. And, Simon, we at the Mary White House Experience would therefore like to say, on the radio,
Simon can't wipe his ass! Simon can't wipe his ass!
And now, everyone in the audience, if you would, after three, one, two, three,
Simon can't wipe his ass! Simon can't wipe his ass!
Now, there can be nothing more unpleasant than this sort of immature taunting, except perhaps standing downwind of Simon during a teacher's strike.
And now the punchline experience. Before the show started, the studio audience were invited to write down witty answers to the following joke. The 90s will be my favourite decade because, and we've collated them on bits of paper and I shall read out them all, and the funniest will win a prize, a Remington Fuzzaway. It wasn't claimed last week, I'm sorry. The 90s will be my favourite decade because by the end of the decade I should have one of the highest paid jobs, and that's from A. Smith, ambulance driver. Fair enough. Because I can look forward to the demise of Margaret Thatcher and to make the Director General of the BBC a comedian, then again I forgot they already have.
Yes indeed, better politics there, okay.
And that's from Kate Geary, known to her friend as Sad Bastard, no doubt. The 90s will be my favourite decade because it was twice as good as the 45s. Yes, I was here last week by Steve Stewart, who probably has a job as Bob Monkhouse's script gatherer. The 90s will be my favourite decade because I got nicked for fare evasion on the way here. From Brian Spires. I'm afraid, Brian, that I think you'll find that a £200 fine and a criminal record is not exactly a qualification. Bot white porno, anti-neighbours, Kinnock will rule okay. That's from Dr. Ephraim Strange Trousers, Zodiac Astrologer. Good to see that Kinnock has attracted the support of the moderates there.
The Houses of Parliament echo with heated debate. Will TV be better or worse if we deregulate? The tired old Tories just say it's a question of choice. That's like saying what's funnier, a bucket of shit or Max Boyce. Well, do these pillocks all think that they're trying to fool? They just want to be able to turn on their TVs at 2 a.m. and drool over naked Italian housewives. So make sure your satellite dish isn't wonky. Oh, naked Italian housewives. Well, if that's not enough, there's much pervious stuff, like a show starring Annika Rice, 7 dwarves and a donkey. Come on. We're not saying deregulation will all be a mess. It might get rid of Channel 4 opera and televised chess. And if you've seen Bullseye or Top of the Pops, you'll agree. We're already familiar with seeing big tits on TV. So say adios to the TV on which you are banking. All the viewers instead can get into their head an image of Members of Parliament J. Arthur Rankin over those naked Italian housewives. Some people might say it's providing a service. Yes, naked Italian housewives. If an orgy's your scene, they'll beam onto your screen, one with Valerie Singleton, Shep,
woof,
and of course Peter Purvis. And boy, do we mean perf. Come on, naked Italian housewives, plus the odd one from Sweden that's desperately arty. Yes, naked Italian housewives, in movies as blue as an old blue suede shoe, or sweep nubbing Sue, or a cold kangaroo, but not quite as blue as the f***ing Conservative Party, and without quite as many dicks.
You have been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punk, Hugh Dennis, Mark Thomas, Tracy Brothers, and Donny Murphy. The sound was John by Jean Wattal. The producer was Bill Dev for Rapido. Thank you. Good night.